So I've got a question for all the video game lovers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance, so I'd visit alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
This week on Retronauts, our bodies are ready for Reggie. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's topic is goodbye, Reggie Fils-Aimé. That's right. Nintendo of America's president is stepping down after almost 15 years, or maybe just 15 years. Who can count all those memories? Before we go on, who else is here with me today? Across from me, sitting across from me in Berkeley is...
ready to be reginated, Henry Gilbert.
Uh-oh. And who is on the line, special guest?
It's me, Elton John, saying goodbye, Yellow Brick Reg. Well, no, I'm Jeremy Parrish.
Jeremy is in his castle in North Carolina, phoning in for the first time.
I do not phone in my work, Bob.
East meets West.
Yes, he's hanging out his work, yes. Not phoning in.
Right.
They're hanging it out.
Like laundry.
And, you know, the Elton John reference is funny because his real name is Reginald, too.
That's right.
Oh,
Sir
my God.
Reginald.
You're right.
But, yes, we're doing this podcast because Reggie Fils-Aimé is retiring. Have you heard the news, everybody? And he's been on our radar since the early 2000s, E3 2004 to be specific. So that's when he made his big splash into our worlds. And we normally don't celebrate executives on this podcast, but he was basically the non-Mario mascot of Nintendo for 15 years. So I want to talk about him before the reign of the evil Doug Bowser starts, villain of the Mario Kingdom. And as of this recording date, Reggie is officially leaving on April 15th, 2019, about a month from this recording date. So we got a month of Reggie left. Got to save for every day of Reggie. But I want to know from everybody, Jeremy, you have been in the press the entire time for Reggie's entire tenure. I want to start with you. I want to talk about real-life Reggie encounters. Did you encounter Reggie in the wild? He seems like a very large and intimidating man, but he's sort of a friendly giant, if you will. But
he is.
What are your experiences with him?
He's a soft marshmallow-like man. No, you know, I started in the press in 2003, and he actually started working at Nintendo, or at least, you know, stepped into the presidential role while I was covering Nintendo in the press. But I don't remember anything about the guy who was there before him, because who cared about Nintendo in 2003? Mm-hmm. I mean, I did, but not so much in the business side, but more in like the, well, I hope they get out a few more games that I like before they go broke. So my first actual encounter with Reggie, I'm trying to remember exactly when it was. Once upon a time, the press went up to Nintendo headquarters in Redmond, Washington, to actually do Nintendo events. And then Nintendo wised up and opened up an office in the, you know, San Francisco Bay Area. So those days went away. But I took a lot of trips back then up to Seattle because I was... you know, the only one at 1UP who really cared about Nintendo at that point. And I know that I had a few meetings there that Reggie conducted. I want to say the first time I really experienced the true sensation of Reggie was in 2005. I feel like it was kind of when they were in that interim between DS and Wii, like their launch of those two systems, where they were kind of proving that, hey, DS is not just this weird flash in a pan. It is a thing that matters and is good, and we're going to follow up with it, you know, with the Wii, which is also going to be weird and different and good. So I want to say my first like true full frontal Reggie experience was at a meeting at NOA headquarters late summer 2005, where he had a bunch of press gathered together, like 20 people at tables, and just started talking to us and started going about this thing called the Blue Ocean. And everyone was kind of like, what just happened here? But if I'm not mistaken, that's also the same meeting where they gave the press advanced copies of Mario Kart DS. And it might have been two separate events in the same room. But I feel like this was the event where we got Mario Kart DS early, like 2 or 3 months early. It was crazy how early they gave it to us. And we were all like, oh, okay, Blue Ocean, whatever. This game is amazing. So that is my impression. He curried favor by saying weird things and then giving us an amazing game.
I personally occupy the same space as Reggie only a few times.
Me too, yeah.
I only got to go to the last true Nintendo press conference, the Nintendo Land debacle.
I was there.
Yes. So we both
at the Nokia Theater, right?
Yes, yeah. We both got to get the Reggie experience then, which, as you know, I had been watching him since I was just a 22-year-old forum dork who was so excited to watch any Nintendo press conference. And I was a Nintendo fanboy. Yeah, I still am, I guess. I think I'm more impartial now, but I became the Nintendo person at the website I worked at after a few people left. I posit I was always the top Nintendo fan, but I officially became the Nintendo coverer at that point. And so not 2011, which no, Nintendo Land was 2012. So 2013, that was the first time I got to go to like a Nintendo E3 event that Reggie hosted. And he was like 5 feet from me. And he was, you know, his usual friendly self, giving you his very like practiced but realistic PR speeches. But the realer Reggie I got to see randomly at E3, I believe was both 2013 where he or 20, one was, yeah, 2013 and 2014. 2013, it was right after the evening Nintendo E3 thing they would do on like Wednesday evening or Tuesday evening. And at that, I got to watch someone who worked at Kotaku just ask him at the escalators, guys didn't talk about Fire Emblem Awakening. Where's Fire Emblem Awakening? And then Reggie says, it's coming out. That's a good question. Yes. Yeah. I felt like that was a rare time of him going off script and be like, you know what? I'm just going to announce it. We're putting it out in America. And then, but the closest I ever got to Reggie, was at, Jeremy, you may have been there. Were you there for Star Fox Wii U?
Was this an event at the W Hotel in San Francisco?
No, this was at E3. This was like Sunday night before E3 of 2014.
Oh, you know, I never got invited to the Sunday night things.
Okay. Well, so this
not
was
that cool.
This was Sunday night where they show off Star Fox Wii U, which we all know how that turned out. But it was full of hope then. And that was also the only time I've ever asked a direct question to Shigeru Miyamoto in person, too. But anyway, Reggie was there. Of course he was there. And before they show you Star Fox Wii U, they're like, come over for lunch or have dinner at the catering. So it's us all eating with the regular Nintendo employees that I just know from working with them enough. And also Chris Kohler was there too, friend of this show.
I'm not surprised.
And I got to see Reggie walk up like in total goofy dad mode, acting like the Reginator character he had just played in one of their E3 pre-E3 videos they did with Mega 64. He's wearing his glasses like, that's right, it's me, the Reginator, give me your barbecue. And
he's real.
It was a cute, funny moment. And then after Star Fox Wii U, as me and another person, I forget who, are leaving, we're kind of lost in the convention center because it's not fully open. So we're having to leave like through like the service exit or something and we can't find it. And we're just like, man, where is it? And then we just hear somebody say like, oh, it's over there. Just take a right. And then I look and it's the giant man, Reggie Fils-Aimé, telling us how to exit the convention center.
And so you look back again, there just sparkles in the air. Like, was he ever here?
So that was my most interactions with Reggie. I mean, I was near him about maybe two or three other E3s where he was like announcing stuff. But those are the most like interpersonal Reggie moments of my life.
I only saw him from the audience of that 2011 E3 conference. So he was safe from all of my questions. He was kept safe from all the other three questions. So I want to talk about some basic Reggie facts you need to know.
Oh, wait, wait. I didn't get to give my I didn't realize we were doing all the anecdotes here.
Oh, please. So I mean, we could drop them throughout. But if you've got some good ones up front, let's hear it.
My dumbest in-person anecdote about Reggie was at an event in, I guess it was 2010, at the one that I mentioned, the W Hotel in San Francisco. I guess it was, it was for some, like, a bunch of Nintendo games. You know, they had announced Dragon Quest IX for the U.S.
Ah.
So there were a bunch of journalists kind of just, like, chatting with them, and I was there kind of in that group, and I, you know, interjected a few times, but I did, you know, the question of Dragon Quest IX came up, and I, you know, gave him some business advice because that's what he's looking for from journalists. So, you know, that game is really about sharing and networking and collaboration. So you guys really have to get that out before PAX West if you really want to take advantage of it and maximize, you know, the effectiveness of Dragon Quest IX in the U.S. And he was very gracious about my incredibly insightful business information about a long-term plan that they had set up probably a year in advance and had no intention of changing based on the say-so of some dipshit.
I have no stories of professional embarrassment for this podcast. I'm sorry.
That is what I've got. And then the closest non-encounter I've ever had with him was street passing him in the bathrooms at E3. If you know the E3 Convention Center, the LA Convention Center, Nintendo's booth is always at the back of, I think, West Hall.
Mm. Yeah.
And there are, you know, restrooms back there. And so they're just like, you know, trough style urinals. They're the worst. Ugh. But I was leaving the restroom after washing my hands, and he walked past me, and I stepped out of the bathroom and looked at my 3DS, which this was probably like 2013, 2014. So I still carried it everywhere and always street passed, and was very meticulous about clearing out my street passes. And I looked, and yes, I got his actual E3, his actual me, as opposed to the one that you get like as a gold special guest.
Yeah.
And his actual me does not look like the one that he shares.
Ooh. I have
as his official PR curated me.
I forgot I also have his me as well. I street passed him too. I with some pride, I can say I never used a bathroom at E3 because I never wanted to. I held it.
Order for me.
Do you just like die or something?
I held it.
Do you hold it all day? And
well, I can hold it in, and I also dehydrated myself and didn't eat anything.
You put your health at risk. That's not
the way to do it, Henry. Like,
don't do what I did, okay? Let me be a
Donnie. You need your tactical gaming diaper for E3. I've said it before.
But yes, I did street pass him. I mean, to really let you know what a fucking dork I was, in between Nintendo appointments, while I was in like their press area at E3, I was just clearing my street pass over and over, like, there's got to be other Nintendo folks here. I want to street pass all of them. Clear street pass. I obviously dreamed as like getting Iwata or Miyamoto. I only got Reggie and Takashi Tezuka.
Those, still good.
Yeah. I've gotten them too. I think they were the only ones who cared enough to carry their 3DSs around.
Tezuka just makes himself a Kappa. Like, it's really cute. That's great. I like that.
So I do want to talk about basic Reggie facts.
Yes.
He's got an interesting life, especially where he came from. So he was born in 1961 in the Bronx to Haitian immigrants, very appropriate for working at Nintendo. Their famous character Mario is an immigrant character from New York.
That's true.
So there you have it. In terms of academics, he got a BA in Applied Economics from Cornell in 1983. And from there, he was selected to be a candidate for the Procter & Gamble Brand Management Program, which typically drew from the MBA program. So no master's degree for Reggie. He went right into the world of business, where he worked in their food and beverage division until 1991, when he went to Pizza Hut with some major pizza innovations, people. Yes. We're talking about the Bigfoot. We're talking about the New Yorker with 1 pound of cheese. I watched that commercial. They are so proud of having 1 pound of cheese on a pizza.
Is Reggie responsible for Pizza Hut's transformation from this kind of like cozy family restaurant where you would go and sit down and have a meal to whatever it is now, just like the quick grab it and go trash pizza purveyors?
I think so. I mean, I think his entire thing that he does as a businessman is shifting demographics to increase profitability. And that's what he did with every place he went to. So Pizza Hut was the cozy bistro style dining for middle income people.
It was like a step down from, you know, Shakey's, but it was still pretty decent back when I was a kid. Maybe the pizza sucked, but at least the atmosphere was okay. But yeah, I wouldn't want to go there now and like sit and eat. I've done that within the past 5 years, and it was a dark experience.
I was
in Florida, so who knows? Maybe that was it.
I think you can't go back to Pizza Hut, but no, the Bigfoot pizza was basically like the most pizza you could order at once. Just like a giant, like that was my teenage years, just like constant sleepovers and constant friend parties with just a giant sheet pizza.
A Bigfoot is a perfect sleepover pizza if you're in your early, if you're in the tween years as a boy. And it fits perfectly with video games.
Yes, a lot of N64, a lot of eating Bigfoot pizzas at that time period. But yeah.
So how big was the Bigfoot pizza? Because when I was a kid, there was a pizza place that served the monster pizza. It was a kind of a semi-local chain. But that thing was like, I don't know how people fit it in their cars.
I don't have exact measurements, but it was the size of like your normal sofa cushion that you sit on.
I think it was called like 2 feet of pizza. Like I think, or 18 inches. Yeah. I think it's 18 inches by 12 inches, I believe it was. But I can just see the Bigfoot mascot in my head right here. And well, when you talk about a shifting demographics thing, like that was... pizza innovations, like that was Pizza Hut's brand under him. Like Bigfoot was just one of many, like, well, it's another 4 months. They're going to try a different type of pizza.
And I believe stuffed crust.
It's such a, like, I feel like they were engaged in a race to the bottom with Little Caesars. Like, how much pizza can we give people for a very small amount of money?
No, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think things like Bigfoot really predicted Little Caesars, where all the like Applebee's and Chili's and everything like that, they were in major trouble after the economic recession. But Little Caesars is like, we'll give you the worst pizza ever for $5. It'll feed your family. You won't like it.
And you can just show up and get it. Like it's hot and ready. Here you go. Just come in. I mean, also during his time, that is when Pizza Hut shifted to be more of the delivery chain it is. Just like a hole in the wall that can fit a front counter and a pizza oven. And that's kind of it, like to use as little space as possible. I think it wouldn't be wrong to say that the Bigfoot is the Nintendo DS of pizza.
Oh my god, but don't try folding it. Hey, big disaster. So after basically from 1983 to 2001 he worked in food. That was the majority of his life working in business. But in 2001 he went to VH1 where he was their president of marketing, and he increased their ratings by almost 30% by shifting to a younger demographic. I think that was the era of the nostalgia shows, maybe?
I Love the Blanks, 100%. Yeah, that's, I think near the end of his tenure in 03 was when it really started. But it was just a lot of like commentary on commentary, like the podcasts of their day, really.
Yeah, I think VH1.
What year was this that he moved over to VH1?
Early 2000s.
Oh, okay.
Because I think like VH1 was like, that's the boomer station, and MTV was the Gen X station. They wanted like Gen Xers to graduate into VH1. I think that was his idea.
When I was a kid, VH1 was the channel you turned to if you wanted to see a Phil Collins video. You knew that every 30 minutes there was going to be a Phil Collins video. That's the demographic there.
You can set your watch to it. But we do Talking Simpsons.
And Old Faithful.
In the episode of The Simpsons where they steal cable, Homer is pointing out the virtues of cable. He says MTV for the kids and VH1 for us. So in 1991, 10 years before that, that was the idea of VH1. TV for boomers.
You know, I think under Reggie's era, when you talk about demographics changes, he knew more people had aged out of MTV. And so he needed to be more welcoming to them, not the imagined people who aged out of MTV in the early 1990s, which had been their demographic. So, yeah, they definitely made VH1 more inviting. I mean, also in his era, well, it predated him, but Behind the Music, too. Like, that was a huge thing for VH1.
Yeah, it really was. So let's get on to Nintendo and Reggie. Hey,
hang on, Bob. I have to rewind just a little bit. Now, please. When Henry compared the Bigfoot pizza to the DS, you said... don't fold it. Are you talking about the pizza?
Yes.
Because I think you're going to get a lot of angry messages from fans of New York Pizza who will tell you that the only way to properly eat a piece of floppy, mediocre pizza is folded over.
Oh my God, shots are being fired. Ouch. No, Jeremy, you fold the New Yorker pizza.
Yes,
that's the only way to put that pound of cheese into a tube, just cram down your esophagus.
But the Bigfoot, but yes, the
it's like a cannoli.
The Bigfoot is more of a casserole, or it's like a focaccia bread pizza, really.
Oh, okay, like, so it is like Little Caesar's pizza. Okay,
it's
just, never mind.
It's very flat and very square and hard to fold. But
yes,
so let's move on to Nintendo and Reggie, because that's the entire point of this podcast. And he was hired by Nintendo in December of 2003 to be their executive vice president of sales and marketing. And eventually he worked his way up to be COO and president in 2006. And he replaced Kimishima, who is Kimishima, the current president, which I didn't even know he was there for 4 years. Like, he was such a non-entity.
It was so nothing. Well, I mean, let's talk about Nintendo of America in the pre-Reggie years. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying, is like, I have no idea who he replaced because no one cared.
That was news to me. Yeah. Like, the current president was the president before Reggie.
I had learned it and forgot it because I remember when Kimishima was made the president of NCL. That's when I found out that he used to be the president of NOA, but I had completely forgotten it. And I had forgotten it again.
Yeah, likewise.
But yeah, no, I mean, in the 90s, from the 80s into the 90s, it was Arakawa, Minoru Arakawa, was founder of Nintendo of America, the, you know, a good boss, but also like the son-in-law, the hated son-in-law of Yamauchi, it seemed like. Yamauchi didn't seem to like him that much, but Arakawa was the boss, and, you know, my guess is that he probably saw he wasn't going to get the role Wada would get, and so he left, he quit. But even when he worked there, the guy who they interviewed, at least in magazines in the 90s when I read them, was Howard Lincoln.
Yeah.
To give a white face to this Japanese company, because Japan is scary to Americans, especially back then.
So Reggie, being the new guy at Nintendo, made his splash at E3 2004 with an introduction that he did not come up with, but it was the best way for him to introduce himself to the new audience when Nintendo really needed to fight. And Henry, please play that clip of Reggie and his swears. His filthy mouth.
My name is Reggie. I'm about kicking ass. I'm about taking names. And we're about making games.
There you have it.
And it goes straight to Star Fox Adventures Dinosaur Planet. I forgot that bit.
And that was a big E3 for Nintendo. It was them turning things around a bit. E3 2003 was basically what? Pac-Man versus?
The worst.
Yeah.
The worst. Yeah.
And I read a Kotaku article about that press conference. And what we're not hearing, you might hear a little bit of him in that clip. There was a heckler throughout the entire conference. A heckler. It was a much different time for the games press when you could just be the in-room heckler, I guess. I want to know who that was now.
You know, honestly, I think I would prefer a heckler to the guys who, like, give a standing ovation with their fucking Vitas in their hands.
All these Sony fanboys that are trucked in. Yeah.
But hecklers are bad. I'm kidding. But.
So the intro, not Reggie's idea. Nintendo needed to be aggressive. They were not doing well. They were still profitable. But if you go back to our GameCube episode that we did a while ago, you'll see, like, compared to Sony and Microsoft, how poorly they were doing in comparison to the competition.
My goodness. Yeah, I mean, like, the GBA was getting older. The GameCube was a big old flop. Their worst selling system, I think, until Wii U, sure. But also, yeah, it was just seen as, like, old hat. And it also was seen as, like, well, you have these two giant corporations in Microsoft and Sony. Nintendo's just left out. Sega just died. Nintendo's next. That was just the feeling. And also, Nintendo was just feeling, like, old. They didn't know what they wanted. Like, they lost Rare. So you didn't have the weird British-y Rare games that had violence in it. They weren't getting as many exclusives as anybody else. And then you also were like, you didn't know if Wind Waker. You were kind of like, do I like Wind Waker? That's how people felt. It was just a weird, weird time for Nintendo. And then on top of that, their E3 press conference of 2003 was like just a bummer town. If you were into the horse race of the systems, it was bad. They ended it with what Miyamoto thought was a really cool idea. Pac-Man versus. They got Pac-Man. They got the creator of Pac-Man to come back and make a Pac-Man game with Nintendo. That's an amazing idea if you know that information.
Yeah, that game was so much fun, but not what you need to sell a system. So at this point in time, more people are getting online, of course. There's more broadband internet. And these conferences are now, you can watch them. Maybe not live in 2004.
I was watching it live. I watched it live.
Wow, I didn't know you could do that. You IGN insider, you. But Nintendo needed a non-stuffy businessman on stage, and Reggie was the perfect person for that because he is charismatic, but he's not charismatic in a sleazy way. Like, when I was thinking about Reggie, I think he's a good salesman, but there's still a bit of dorky awkwardness that makes him endearing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's way more charismatic than I could ever be, but there's still like a little bit of realness to him that makes him seem sincere.
I don't feel like he's trying to steal my wallet like every boss at EA who's telling me about a game. Like,
yeah, I mean, he never got a like a Jay Allard makeover. And
Jay,
I think
Allard.
That's for the best. Like, you know, Microsoft was, you know, Jay Allard, you're kind of this, you know, schlumpy middle-aged balding guy, lose some weight, wear a blazer over a hooded sweatshirt, talk cool to the kids, you know, get down, talk to them on their level, rap with them. That never happened with Reggie. He was like, I'm here to make dad jokes and be goofy. Take that as you will.
I'm sure.
And he was never afraid to, you know, like, so concerned about his cool image that he couldn't be in some sort of completely ridiculous video skit or something. And, you know, all of those, like him getting toasted by Bowser popping out of a 3DS or something, like, those were super endearing. None of the other major hardware makers would do that. Like, can you imagine, you know, the president of Microsoft or Sony taking part in one of those, like, you know, like college student skits? No, that would
Ken
never
Kutaragi
happen.
Goofing around with that stuff, like, I can't imagine that.
Or Don Matrick, that horrible loser.
I want to dunk on him later.
Let's talk about him later.
Well, but that E3 2004 was huge too, because, like, him, it's dumb to say it, and he says ass, whoop-de-doo. But when, especially if you were a touchy Nintendo fan who was being told on forums that you like baby games for babies, to then have a cool dude on stage who's like tough and saying ass, like, it felt cool at the time.
It's like
time.
Having the cool dad who lets you drink at home.
Yeah. What I believe.
Yeah, it's like Uncle Reggie could totally beat up your Uncle Jay Allard.
Exactly. Well, and E3 2004, like, you begin with Reggie and you end with
Twilight Princess.
Twilight Princess. Yeah. Like, so it was a totally different company for fans to look at then. Like, it was a huge turning point at 04. I think too, one of the first things that I really, an underrated moment in Reggie, his first time on stage, was that he wanted to surprise people, like his "and one more thing" that he always did. And his first one, I remember, I believe it was at the 04 one, he pulls out the Game Boy Micro and he's like, and we have our new system right here, actually, and pulls it out of his front pocket, the Game Boy Micro, and he's just standing still, letting people take pictures of it. Like, and the Game Boy Micro is nothing. And we've
made 14 of these.
But that's what's so cool too, that he made, like, Nintendo in 2003 would have announced a Game Boy Micro with a lame video and not known how to present it. Reggie's like, let me hold this up and make it sound like this 4-3 packaging of the Game Boy Advance is actually amazing. It did.
Yeah, I mean, they had the good sense to put their tiniest system ever in the hand of their largest executive ever. That's great. That you're like, that's like a little chiclet of a game system. I could swallow that by mistake.
It's a choking hazard, that Game Boy Micro.
Exactly.
But I mean, I don't want to discount Iwata, of course. I think having Iwata and Reggie together, they were like a real power team on business, in terms of business and also what gamers like and what a gamer would do. Mm-hmm. Reggie is not a non-gamer, but Iwata, like, grew up in the shit. Like, he basically programmed stuff. I mean, he slept at the office
and programmed games. Like, he lived the life of a sad programmer, and he loved it. Like, and
he loved fixing games.
And, you know, this is all just guessing, but I got this sense that Iwata respected Reggie's opinion more than most Americans were treated by the company too. I think that you definitely get a real sense of it. And I still think Reggie had to deal with that of NCL in Kyoto makes all the decisions, and then Nintendo of America and Nintendo of Europe just deal with what they're told. But I think Reggie had more input than others before him had. Like, I don't think Howard Lincoln had as much input as him.
They were both a similar ages. I imagine working with Iwata was much easier than working with
Yamauchi.
Oh, yeah. No one wants to work with him. But so obviously, knowing history, Reggie turned the company around in a way that was great for Nintendo. But and we all lived through this, and I think we're still living through it. He also caused a lot of anxiety with the quote-unquote gamers who were worried, like, oh, we're losing space in this thing that's ours. Like, that's not a real game. The DS isn't a real system. The Wii is just a toy. Like, he was causing anxiety in people by targeting a new demographic. When, frankly, if you were old enough, you knew, like, oh, my mom played Nintendo. My grandma played Game Boy. Like, you knew these things were not always exclusively the domain of men. But the 90s made us think, like, these are boy things. These are men things. But Reggie's like, no, no. These were not always like that.
Yeah, the Wii was as scary as... Can you imagine a comic book movie about a female character? That's just terrifying.
Who would
How
ever?
How could that be allowed?
It would never make money, that's for sure.
Certainly not. No, I think it was always the fear of losing ground to the casuals to think that. And that also, and for the kids, I think that led to a love-hate relationship from Nintendo fanboys too with Reggie, at least during that era, because they only wanted a Zelda game that looked better than Uncharted or somebody else's. Like, it was just that horse race, you know?
There's a great video online of Jeff Gertzman of Giant Bomb losing his mind over someone complaining about the graphics in the Link's Awakening remake. He's like, yeah. We've been through this. We've yes. done this already. Please.
It's like, really? Fuck you. Yeah, that's a great video.
Yeah. So I want to read a quote from Reggie that explains his philosophy about the Wii and the DS. He says, quote, "We found that women and older consumers, meaning those past their mid-20s, that's old people, folks. That's me saying that, Can you imagine being past your mid-20s? God. Were very receptive when these products were presented in a way that would interest them. A surprising number of seniors are even playing these games now. Our goal was to bring back gaming to the masses. The stories we have heard about consumers playing games as a family or with friends totally shatter the stereotype of video games being a solitary, reclusive experience." And that's why you would see the Wii on the Today Show and things like that. Like, he was saying, look, like, these are not scary. Here's a button you can press. You wave the thing around. It's not intimidating at all. And you can do this and not feel shame.
Yeah, I mean, in, I guess, 2009, 2010, I went to spend Thanksgiving with a friend of my wife who lives in New York, and we had Thanksgiving dinner with their family. And this is a pair of elderly Vietnamese immigrants, and he likes video games. He's going to love playing Wii bowling with us. And that is what we did for Thanksgiving. We played Wii bowling. And these old people kicked my ass.
That
they
is
were
proof.
Amazing.
I mean, that is proof of the power of this message and this philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the packaging was a big part of it too. Like, it that wand with just one button in it. People are terrified of how many buttons are on a controller. You hand them one, they don't know what to do. It doesn't make sense unless you want to dedicate time to learning it. And when you're already thinking, like, video games aren't for me, then you're feeling even more put out by it. To bring back the comic book metaphor Jeremy was doing there, it's how it's the controllers were as exclusionary feeling as a comic book store is to people.
And every issue, like, is in its 500s.
Yeah.
You have no idea where to start.
And like you said, Bob, he was changing the demographics. Or also, like, from a pure business sense, if you can expand your market and have more people buy stuff, then you make more money and are more successful. Like, so that blue ocean, like, and they could still make games under his vision. They still made games for losers like us. Like,
reclusive weirdos?
Yes. We still got Super Mario Galaxy, which is, until Odyssey, was my favorite 3D Mario game.
Like, what about 2?
Actually, Galaxy 2 is my favorite.
There you
yes,
go.
Yeah. But
I'm glad you came around on that.
Thank you. yeah, we'd still get those games, but I mean, there were definitely stumbles under Reggie too, for sure. Like the Wii U was that. Like I mean,
we could talk about that. So Reggie did preside over a period of failure before the Switch. So the Wii U and the 3DS, obviously the 3DS did much better than the Wii U, but it's a world of difference between how well they were doing between that and the Wii era. And I honestly respect him. It's hard to say I respect an executive. In this case, I can, because he did not flee the company when things were going bad. Mm-hmm. Other executives,
his specific role, he was brought on to shepherd the company into the right direction. I mean, he got into it knowing, like, this company is in the shit. Like, things cannot get too much worse from where we are now. So that was really his mission there.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, after the Wii and DS era, any company would hire him at, like, five times his salary at Nintendo. Just, like, that is the guy who made the Wii a success. Let's get him. And I'm sure he had offers, but he stayed with them through the 3DS and the Wii U era before, you know, the Switch brought them back up to...
Oh, I see what you're saying. My bad. I forgot that they had this catastrophic failure in between Wii and Switch.
Switch effectively and erased...
I've already put it out of my mind. I forgot. What was Wii U?
I still have my Wii U hooked up. It's still good.
The Switch is secretly a Men in Black memory eraser, and it makes you forget about the Wii U.
But I want to say, again, I want to point this out. He stayed. People like Don Matrick... The Xbox One was a failure because he was packing his golden parachute while they were building the system, and he just crash landed into Zynga, where he blow that up and then go to God knows where. Don Matrick, I'm calling you out. You're a loser.
He sucks.
I mean, there are many bad executives, but that is like most executives. Like, I'm not invested in this company. Mm-hmm. I'm here to make my money and get out while the getting's good. And I feel like Reggie was more of an honest and good human being by, like, I'm going to fight through this. I'm going to stay through this. And he's leaving when Nintendo is very successful again.
Yeah, you know, I also want to be clear to listeners that corporations are not your friend, in my opinion. There is no good executive, blah, 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 blah. But... this could just be me being a Nintendo fanboy, but I do like Reggie more than most of them. I think it was a real test of character for him. I was so certain when I was in the games press and the Wii U was doing bad, I was like, I'm just counting the seconds. Any day if I got a press release that Reggie Fils-Aimé had stepped down and replaced by somebody else, never would have been surprised, not once, because the feeling in it is... on a Japanese side of things, you don't quit. Like, you are a lifer at a job. That is not expected of you at all in America, and no one would blame him for leaving. Not only that, but, like, this is old information, but in the David Seff's Game Over book, Howard Lincoln has this quote that always stuck with me. He's like, you don't work at Nintendo to become super rich. Like, you're paid more of a Japanese executive salary, which is a shitload of money, but not ridiculous inflated overpayment that
it's
being an executive.
Bobby Kotick money.
I was thinking of Bobby Kotick.
Exactly. You don't, which... if all you care about is money and you're like a complete monstrous sociopath that lays off 800 people to give yourself a bonus, if you're that type of person, then you leave the second Nintendo's in trouble and just hop to another frying pan. But, and that I thought that Reggie would do that. That he didn't when that opportunity clearly existed for him does show he's one of the better ones and of executives. Nintendo, how many studios do they close? How many layoffs do they do? Like, it's pretty rare Nintendo announces they close a studio. So, yeah, that did, in retrospect, that gives me way more appreciation for Reggie, because I doubt, I mean, I'm sure he was paid great. I'd take Reggie's money in a heartbeat, the money he was being paid. But I highly doubt he was getting the kind of money that... that other executives in America get. Not to mention that, like, he was... Iwata took a pay cut when they were in trouble. Like, so maybe he wasn't even getting a raise at that time. Who knows? Could be.
But I want to say that it's also one of the rare cases in where an executive comes from a different business and actually makes things better. They're not hired because they're a friend or because of their reputation. Their outside perspective actually helps. They're not like, I'm just figuring things out here. I'm the boss, but what do you guys do again? I mean, that different perspective helped Reggie turn the company around, because he was not thinking, like, we only target men. Video games are for these people. He's like, I market food for everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's take what I know and make that apply to video games.
Yeah.
Well, there was plenty of precedent for Reggie coming in and just torpedoing the company. Like when he was installed, you know, when he was announced, and I heard that he was formerly a food executive, the first thing I thought of was John Sculley at Apple, who took over Apple when Steve Jobs was ousted in the 80s. And John Sculley came in as a former Pepsi executive. Like, he did the Pepsi challenge and stuff like that and really made the brand big. But he had no idea what the hell to do with computers. And he watched over Apple as it just kind of went from being like the golden child of computers to the sad, outdated relic that charged too much for hardware that no one wanted. And I really, like, to me, I kind of thought this is going to be the end. This is not good. This is a guy who is basically the new John Sculley. But I was wrong, and I'm happy to have been wrong.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jeremy, because you reminded me of something I wanted to say too, that I had a similar fear that he was going to be something related to wrestling.
Oh, here we go. No, it's fine. I want to hear this.
Very quickly.
Is he the jobber?
No. So in professional wrestling,
that's the only term I know.
There was the company WCW, which was owned by Turner, and they constantly had different corporate suits put in charge. You didn't know anything about wrestling. And one of the worst of those suits was a man named Jim Herd, who was coming from Pizza Hut, and like everybody thought he didn't know what the hell he was doing because he just knew pizza. He didn't know a very specialized business like pro wrestling. And that, I think too, I had a little bit of that fear with Reggie. Like, what does this guy know about games? He's also not one of like my beloved Japanese game developers who can do no wrong. Like that was how I felt about Reggie. I think, but I also do think, looking back at it, like, Reggie had power. He definitely had power, but he didn't have enough power to truly sink the company just through like a move. Like,
he was still working under a parent company.
Yeah. NCL still called the shots. I mean, also you could really feel just from the press side of things, a tension between Nintendo of America and Nintendo of Europe. Like I don't think those two worked together too well in my time in the games press. And so you basically had like these two different children of NCL kind of running things how they both want to and trying to see eye to eye, which Reggie didn't even have control of that, you know?
That's true. So Reggie was, from the very first second of his life as a Nintendo employee, memed to hell and back. Like, that very first appearance at E3, he was called the Reginator. He was being photoshopped into things, turned into videos. And he would sort of lean into that and be, like, weirdly proud of it. And one of his most meme moments, I do want to play this clip. We'd be remiss if we didn't play it. The classic My Body Is Ready clip, which would go on to define Reggie. It was them showing off the Wii balance board in 2007. Let's play the clip of Reggie getting on the balance board, just to give you guys context for this immortal line.
Is do a what we call a body check on somebody. So today, I think we'll do it with Reggie.
Hi.
Reggie? My body is ready.
Hi. じゃあ乗ってください.
Okay, Reggie, please stand on the Wii balance board. So are you wearing just a light layer
heavy clothing?
So he's poking fun at his own weight.
I forgot that heavy clothing. Yeah, that's funny too.
You forget how awkward that line is, because he's gone on to say it in other contexts, but he's like, my body is ready. Like,
and just silence until people nervously start laughing. Like,
but
were you there for that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I
must have been, because I was there for all those press conferences starting in like 2007, 2008. So, yep.
But that would go
but
on.
But they all kind of blend together in my brain. I mean, that might have been the same year that I sat really close to Tak Fuji. My body got sucked. Or what got sucked? I can't even remember. Something got stuck.
You will be
I was
sucked, is what he
yes,
says.
Yes, that's right. We were all sucked.
In that classic line. Not as classic as My Body Is Ready, but I don't think I ever heard the original My Body Is Ready until doing research. Just like, that's where it came from? Wow. But... well, here's the thing. We'll wrap up with this. Like, I feel like the Switch is doing well, but with Iwata now passed away and Reggie gone, both the East and West sides of Nintendo are lacking a president with charisma and sincerity. I mean, Kimishima, is he no longer? So he's out, right? He's not president.
Furukawa, I believe.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is anymore. But I guess Yoshiaki Koizumi is sort of being the Nintendo of Japan spokesperson. And Doug Bowser possibly could be the Nintendo of America guy doing Reggie stuff.
He's hosted some small things. If you look back on it now, the last 3 years, he's made appearances that feel almost like Reggie is priming people to know who
they were.
Doug
they were grooming him.
Yes,
but perhaps
and then at last Reggie could say, "My Bowser is ready."
Oh God! But I mean, like, this could be nostalgia or just rose tinted glasses or whatever, or goggles, whatever that expression is. But I feel like the team of Reggie and Iwata presenting things was just so ideal. They were so likable and so like personable that it's going to be very hard to fill those shoes. Like, I think Koizumi is doing okay, but he still seems like a little not right for the role. And I think the Splatoon guy, like dressing up in the lab coat and stuff, that's kind of fun, but
that's
I don't
know fun,
if that could sustain an entire press conference.
Well,
but,
he needs to be empowered though too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it helped that in the 2000s, starting in 2000, 2001, there was an ascendancy of like Miyamoto moved up to the boardroom. Takeshi Tezuka also moved up. Iwata took over and Reggie Fils-Aimé took over in America. And I don't think this next generation, like, I feel like Reggie was more forceful in his making his presence known and being part of things. Like, can Bowser be that guy? Or is there somebody like Iwata over there who can give space to Reggie or listen to Reggie? Like, there's that question for the future of Nintendo without Reggie. Like, but he's, you know, hey, he deserves a retirement. He's 57. Relax.
He's made so many pizzas. Jeremy, what do you think about the future of Nintendo from like a spokesperson angle?
It's maybe that's why they've gone to Nintendo Directs, because they just, they don't have the stage presence anymore. I don't know. Like, I haven't gotten a read on Doug Bowser, but if a video games business were a sitcom, or not a sitcom, but like a romantic comedy, he would be like the uncle of the main character who, you know, when the main character goes through the obligatory heartbreak before he and the girl get back together, he'd be the one offering advice on like, well, let me tell you about my sad sack. That's the impression I get. He's like a minor sad sack character in a romantic comedy. He needs to step forward and prove that he's not.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion is, I think they have two really good spokespeople in Kit Ellis and Krista Yang who do their Nintendo stuff.
They're great.
But I feel like, from my own perspective, like, I like what they do and the stuff that they do now, but I think you need someone in authority or someone with more authority to be presenting those big things.
Well, so, yeah, here's the impression I got just from working a lot over the years with Nintendo PR is that people who worked with him really liked Reggie. And I think in Nintendo of America, there are things that people at levels below Reggie, they are not allowed to do. And you're not allowed to say, or you have to send like 5 emails to Japan. And I think Reggie had like the special ability to be like, if this gets heat with Japan, I will take the heat. But we need to say this now and not wait for Japan to agree to this. Or Japan would never do stuff with Mega 64 to do a silly video to get people ready for Nintendo Treehouse Live. But Reggie can not only star in them, but also probably be one of the main boosters in meetings who can tell people like, hey, trust me, we should do this. And like him leaning into the comedy of his character also gave approval to Nintendo of America to loosen up just a little bit.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, his Nintendo Direct presence was just so fun. Like he was like the Walt Disney hosting the Disney Hour on ABC, telling you like, oh, hi, welcome to my office. I'm a real person. And you'd at least believe it a little bit. And
yeah, he did a Davy Crockett cap.
I mean, yeah. his amiibos on his desk were his Davy Crockett cap. Or he put on a Mario cap several times.
Yeah, and there were like bananas on his desk at one point.
If you want to make comparisons too, like, you can even just do it with Nintendo. I remember covering Nintendo of Directs with my UK counterparts at the website I worked at. They got none of this Reggie fun because Nintendo of Europe Directs were hosted by their president, Satoru Shibata.
I was going to do a British accent.
Like, that's why I was quick to like, no, it was actually a Japanese transplant.
There'll be
like,
one new Mario game this year. It will be called Mario Adventure 3.
But isn't that interesting too? The Nintendo of Europe, like, they had the classic Japanese business model of, No, we'll just send somebody from Japan to work the business here.
I mean, that was the previous two presidents of Nintendo of America.
And Shibata seemed nice and all. He wasn't a great host. He seemed fine.
Yeah.
And though now they actually got a new president last year, I forgot. So it is now a Frenchman, Stéphane Bollet.
Okay.
So good luck, Stéphane, with all your videos. But yeah, so actually they're all going through these transformations. But you see Reggie in those directs, like, his presence made a difference. It didn't feel like a real direct if you didn't see Reggie in them. Not to sound like too much of a fawning fanboy. And the last thing I'll say about Reggie, and I think his impact on it, I don't know if you can directly credit this to him, but if you've paid attention to competitive fighting games, Evo 2013 or 14, they were going to have Melee at it, and it was a huge deal. Melee was going to be on the main stage, and it was going to be on ESPN or some network. Then Nintendo, in a very classic Nintendo of Japan type move, said,
hey, they're watching our games for free.
Yep, you can't do that. They don't like Melee anymore either. They don't want people to stream Melee. It was taken away. It was a huge negative for them, especially for a company that's trying to sell a new Smash Brothers game that year. And so then they did a big reverse on it, and Reggie was one of the top dudes talking about specifics of the fighting game community for Smash. Like, he did in jokes about the Smash fighting community. So if it wasn't his call, he at the very least supported that reversal on it. And Nintendo reversing their position on Smash and Evo was a major, major moment for the fighting game community and a big positive for Nintendo. Everybody figured there's like, oh, it's no fun, Nintendo. They're not going to let us stream. They don't understand current day. Like Smash 4 and also Smash Ultimate, those totally understand streaming and competitive sports, and like they lean into that. And I think Reggie had at least something to do with that. That happened under his watch, and I think he could boost for that in to the Japanese team guys all in Kyoto.
Yeah, it seems like a style. But yeah, that's our little discussion on Reggie. Thanks again to Jeremy and Henry for being part of this. And Henry, this is your idea, so thank you. Like, when Reggie announced his retirement, you were like, we got to do an episode about this. And I didn't know if there was much to say, but there is. Like, this is all very important stuff, and he kind of saved Nintendo, I mean, with the help of many other talented people. But his marketing expertise really, really helped.
Yeah, he was an expert at giving. What I'll miss about Reggie is that he was an expert at giving answers that seemed like they answered your questions but gave you nothing. But you thought you had a big exclusive. Like, I remember him either like on talking to Jeff Keighley and Jeff asking him like kind of a tough question, like, so what about Metroid? He's like, Metroid's an important thing to our business and we're really looking forward to it. You know, it's one of my favorite games, Jeff, and I'm a big fan of games in general, you know? And you're just like, okay, he answered my question, and then you walk away. You're like, no, he didn't. Wait a minute.
And then he's gone.
But he was, I mean, that is media trained right there.
Like, yeah, you
can,
yeah.
As a press member, I can appreciate that. He was very good. Steven Totella, but he also wouldn't give you bullshit. Like, also, someone asked him about diversity in games, too, and he went there of saying, like, you know, I'm a non-white executive, and I try to make, this is paraphrasing, but he talked about how he is not Reggie talks about how he's a person of color, and he wanted Nintendo of America to be inviting in that way too. And so I think he understood stuff a lot better than a lot of other execs did, or at the very least, he tricked me into thinking he cared, which isn't.
And that's the point of all business, right? Yes. So hats off to you, Reggie. Hope you're enjoying your pina coladas and Bigfoot pizzas on the beach, and take care of yourself. We want you to live very long. But Jeremy, thanks for being on this remote podcast with us.
It's dinner time here on the East Coast, so I'm going to go get some mediocre pizza.
Oh, that sounds good. Before you go, though, I'll do the Retronauts plugs. Can you please tell us things you're working on, like videos and books and whatnot? I know you've got a lot of stuff going on outside of the podcast.
Sure. Yeah. I'm doing all kinds of crazy stuff, some of which I can't even talk about yet. But of course, you could find me on Twitter as GameSpite and at Retronauts.com. And you can also find my video projects every Wednesday. I do a video retrospective on a different game chronologically in its release order on a different platform. Right now I'm doing mostly Virtual Boy. And believe it or not, Virtual Boy as a piece of hardware might have been But the games were actually mostly pretty good. And it's been interesting to gaze at them through eyes unclouded by hate. So you can check that out on my YouTube channel or look up Virtual Boy Works. Yeah, so far I've published two books on the NES and two books on Game Boy. And they're both lovely hardcover full color books with original high resolution screen grabs and photography by me along with the text. So those are lovely. Just check them out. They're great.
That's fangamer.net.
Indeed it is,
excellent.
Bob.
Excellent, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us. So that's it for this week's episode of Retronauts. And by the way, we are on Patreon and supported by very kind patrons, just like you kind listeners out there. So if you want to help the show and get every episode ad-free and a week ahead of time, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. And for $3 a month, you can have just that. And you can support the show. We've been going on independently for almost 6 years. So we'd like to keep going on and on and on and on and on and on. So please go to patreon.com/retronauts. There are many incentives after that $3 level. Check them out, everybody. Henry, you and I work together on so many things.
Yes, yeah, you know,
and I'm just going to sit back and let you do all these plugs.
Well, you know, I love doing Retronauts because it's where I can still let my video game fandom fly, especially for Nintendo. Love doing that. But full-time job is me and Bob do Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, a pair of weekly podcasts where we celebrate animation in all its wondrous forms, be it a chronological exploration of The Simpsons from the first episode or a different animated series each week where we focus on one specific episode of it. For our animated series, we've even done a couple of What a Cartoons with Jeremy Parrish, our co-host on this one, like The Max and G.I. Joe. And also, if you love hearing me and Bob talk with this kind of room tone, boy, then you'll love these What a Cartoon and Talking Simpsons podcasts, which are also supported by a Patreon that you will get numerous bonuses if you sign up at the $5 level, which includes our just launched Talking of the Hill. So not only could you hear us talk about a different Simpson episode each week, a different animated series each week, but the entire first season of King of the Hill, 1 week at a time. You can listen to that if you go to the $5 a month level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Please check it out. It's what helps me and Bob record in finery here.
But thanks again for listening to Retronauts, folks. We'll see you on Monday for a brand new episode. Thanks again.